This episode contains spoilers for 2002's XXX, as well as some strong language. But if you're okay with being called Scarface and having someone tell you to kiss your ass, well then please, enjoy the show.
Those guys attack these guys. These guys podcast those guys.
Okay, fuck it. Let's go with that. Hi, everyone. This is Movie Mixology. This is the podcast for amateur film lovers and bartenders alike. I am one of your hosts. My name is Pat.
I'm Marissa.
And today we are going to be talking about a film that inspired our last drink. For those of you guys tuning in for the first time, this is the show where we take a drink from or inspired by a film, and we enjoy both very, very greatly. This episode will be the latter. It will be an inspired by movie because we were inspired by three things, three very big things, namely the three X's in the title. Because we're doing...
And on Vin Diesel's neck.
Yes, thank you. Because we are doing XXX from 2002, directed by Rob Cohen. And the drink we are inspired to have that I'm totally sipping right now is called an XYZ. An XYZ. Three letters for a three-letter film. And who better to discuss such simplistic yet very complex things than... our favorite guest on the show, our very own Riggs Brown. Welcome back.
Thanks. I didn't know I was the favorite. I'm honored. I'm also honored to be here for the season finale.
Well, let me just put it this way. Well, spoilers first on. Second off, let me just put it this way. You are our favorite guest the way that Xander Cage's favorite sport is rock climbing. In that you're actually not our favorite guest. We love all guests equally. And
whoever's in the room at the moment is the favorite because they're the opportunity.
Exactly. I'm just fucking with you, dude. Come on. We love you having you on this show. Thank you so much for coming back.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad I can be the Vin Diesel go-to.
That's exactly it. I mean, you and I almost became friends over Vin Diesel. It was actually a bit more complicated than that, but he's definitely one of the cornerstones over the foundation of our friendship, right? So we had to have you on for the Vin Diesel spot once again. For those of you guys who tuned in before, Riggs was here for our Fast and the Furious episode, Corona, and that was a trip. Because just watching the movie together for the first time, we'd seen a bunch of Fast and Furious movies together at the time. We'd never rewatched the first one, though. That was great. We rekindled our love for Vin, and we decided to just give it another whirl because XXX is a hell of a movie, and it was Marissa's first time watching.
It was.
And and what did you think? First impressions?
It is everything I thought it would be. It was very entertaining. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Very astute answer. Thank you. So yeah, we are drinking this XYZ cocktail because, like we stated, there are three letters in the title of the movie and three letters in the title of the drink. And as Riggs alluded to, this is going to be our season finale. Wah, wah. And we'll get into more of why that is at the end of the show. But for now, let's get into the XYZ cocktail itself, right? It's a very simple ingredient. And just as there are very simple ingredients that make up the recipe of this movie, such as one-liners, action set pieces, more one-liners, it's a very straightforward recipe to make an XYZ. We just went ahead and went with a simple mix of 1.5 ounces of white rum, except I use spice rum because I'm special. And then we also used 1 ounce of lemon juice and 1 ounce of triple sec. And because of that, we were able to just kind of shake it all up, pour it into a chilled cocktail glass, and serve it with a twist of lemon, which I thought was a nice little addition to it. Give it that nice lemony twist. Marissa, you compared it to a lemon drop. And I got to say, that was very accurate. Albeit, I think it might have been a little stronger for me.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It tastes kind of like a lemon drop or like a lemon flavored candy,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
So it's pretty tasty for all you lemon people out there, people who like lemons, which is myself. So
yeah, naturally. Yeah. Well, it was very tasty. Riggs, what'd you think of the XYZ?
That was fantastic. It was very refreshing. It was the right kind of kick you need to watch a movie like this.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely bonkers.
I agree. Being a bit inebriated helped this movie's overall enjoyability. I mean, it's enjoyable even if you're completely sober. However, in our state, it elevated it, I feel, like a couple of levels, just because every set piece, every one-liner was just, you know, we're not overly analyzing anything. We're just along for the very fun ride. And I appreciated that, and I appreciated the the Rob Cohen-ness of it all. So that's Triple X, that's the drink, and let's briefly, for our listeners, many of whom might be missing Triple X in their repertoire of movies, let's just kind of give the basic premise of the movie before we dive into our shots. So stop me if I say anything out of turn here, but extreme sports aficionado Xander Cage gets hired by the CIA or NSA or some government agency to become
the NSA specifically.
Specifically the NSA, thank you. The NSA specifically to go undercover in Prague to stop a terrorist anarchist group from enacting their plans to release a nerve agent in several European cities. And he gets in with them by just being a charismatic badass? Question mark.
Well, it's worth mentioning that when we say extreme sports aficionado, it's not just that, like, oh, he likes extreme sports and also he's a government spy. No, Xander Cage does not sell out. He won't take a video game deal. All his videos are underground. They run underground websites on the dark web.
Yeah.
So when the government pulls him in, you know he's going to fight back.
Oh, yeah. It's I love that description so much more because you're right. It goes right to the heart of what makes Triple X so enjoyable is that you've just got this like constant tension between him and Agent Gibbons, played by Samuel L. Jackson. So him and Agent Gibbons, no relation, are just like always giving
different spelling.
Yeah. Given these one lines.
As if people thought we were related to this fictional character, but okay.
You never know. They're just giving these one liner offs to each other, starting with, I'm not going to get into the scene I was thinking of, but that happens multiple times where they just have these one liner contests. And it like is always just that, like he doesn't want to sell out. He doesn't want to do the government's bidding, but he also wants to be Captain America to some extent and save the world.
Yeah, because he was like, do I look like I like law enforcement? But then at the end, he's like, you know, waving the American flag. But, you know, maybe that's his thing. He's like, I'm a stuntman from America.
Yeah.
And that was given to him by the guy who's like Q, but not...
Discount Q?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Riggs, I think the like whole focus on his internet videos is like very interesting watching it today because you're like, wow, this was, you know, almost 20 years ago now. And from the very first scene, he's recording like a vlog his car.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this is like way ahead of its time because, you know, now vlogs are a super popular thing that people do all the time. Like any influencer will do a vlog, right? But back then it's like, that's the opening scene. He's constantly referencing video games. And the internet, it just plays like a huge focus in this movie. That's really interesting. I think like a lot of 90s and 2000, early 2000s movies are like, whoa, the internet. But this one does it in like a cool action-y way. I don't know. And then, yeah, the dark web videos thing is hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I think I don't think it's unfair to say that Xander Cage inspired all of the prank videos that went too far. The like, we saw how far we could go if we wore workmen's uniforms and stuck into a movie theater. But then it's also the, we stole a congressman's car to see what would happen.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I swear Jake Paul and Logan Paul watched Triple X at a young age and took all the wrong lessons from this movie.
Yeah, I feel like it probably inspired a lot of people to do some pretty wild things.
My gosh. Well, the thing that inspired us is to talk about some pretty wild shots, because we're going to get into the things that we absolutely had to talk about regarding Triple X in our first segment. Longtime listeners will know it's time for Triple Shot.
It's time for Triple Shot.
So Riggs, as our guest, as our first returning guest, to be exact, I mean, it's only right that you lead off our season finale Triple Shot. Go ahead and give us your first shot.
Well, thank you. So I've got one I'm saving, and I want to lead off with this one because I just couldn't get over how many times it happened. This movie, much like a couple other spy movies that come out around the same time, does everything in its power to be the anti-James Bond. And not the like Kingsman style. It's like, oh, it's James Bond with a twist. No, the opening scene of this movie is a guy who does a spy thing, takes off his jumpsuit, is in a tux, and then is immediately out of place because he enters a metalhead mosh pit and everyone can spot him from a mile away because he's in a tuxedo.
Yeah.
From there, yeah. Like the first note I wrote down was, ah, in this movie, if you wear a suit, you get shot. That's what it is.
Yeah.
The amount of times almost Bond riffs come in through the score, the amount of times that they reference things, at some point, both Triple X and Q say License to Kill.
Yeah.
And of course, because it's saying it's the anti-Bond, it's this little it immediately jumps into the O2 new metal. Like, I promise, guys, we're not James Bond.
I love that. And to your point, like, the very first scene has this supposedly NSA agent getting out of a car and then like ripping off his jumpsuit and he's got a tux underneath. If that doesn't conjure Bond imagery, like right from the get go, I mean, I don't know what does.
He's got the Roger Moore quaff of like kind of blonde, a little flowy hair.
And what ends up happening to that guy? He gets shot on stage and then his body gets crowd surfed.
Yes.
Yeah. That's such a great point. 'Cause I feel like so many scenes in this movie are like direct like redos of some of, I think it's really heavily focused, like you said, Riggs, on Roger Moore Bond, because you know you got that scene with Q, the fake Q, or the Q in this movie. I guess we should probably learn what his character is called, but
I want to say it's Griffiths,
yeah, something like that. And he is showing him all the gadgets and stuff, and then you know there's of course the sexist joke where they're like, let's look at this woman's underwear through our binoculars, and that's exact scene in one of the Roger Moore movies, like that exact scene. And then the
happens in Smallville too,
all this car stunts. That's very Roger Moore like esque, or the different kinds of stunts. This has a twist though when they're jumping out of the cars and planes with parachutes, and then you know, all the water scenes, like they're traveling around bodies of water and like doing stunts on the water.
Definitely very Live and Let Die.
Yeah. But like, you know, you guys were saying that this, every time it like tries to riff on the Bond theme kind of, then it goes into this rock 2000s music. And yeah, it's great because it's kind of makes the movie funny and fun. Like, 'cause you're thinking, okay, so this really is not taking itself too seriously. It's just having a fun time, which I think makes it really fun to watch when you see, like, it's kind of trying to be a little bit of a parody, but mostly just kind of like a dumb action movie. But it plays those two things really well together.
Hard agree. Marissa, what is your first shot?
Oh, so I think that, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, we talked a lot about when we were watching it that
I swear to God, if you bring up heat,
No. This movie, obviously, and the Fast and Furious have a lot in common, right? Mm-hmm. Namely, like, the director and Vin Diesel and everybody. But I think that the fashion, like, you know, this is probably a very obvious point, but I think that it's worth talking about because, you know, so Vin Diesel in this and in the Fast and Furious franchise, I would say, he has the same look where he wears tank tops and tight long sleeve t-shirts like the whole time. And that's a very good look for him. You know, he totally owns it. It's always like black or white tees or tight tank tops. But in this movie, they take sort of a fashion risk and put him in these like really interesting coats. He has like three different coats. One of them is, they're all like sheepskin, I think, but one or sheep, not skin. It would be the fur.
It looks like wool.
Yeah. Looking for the right word. And he wears like kind of a light jacket, like with that kind of aesthetic. And you're like, oh, that's a pretty interesting jacket. But then he goes to the club and he's like wearing this robe, basically, that's ginormous. And that's one of the first things that you see when you look up this movie online is you see him in that big puffy robe. And I feel like it takes a lot of, you know, confidence in yourself, you know, to be able to rock something like that. Because they did give him the leather jackets. They did give him the traditional, like, badass attire. But then they just had him in these very interesting looking coats. And I feel like him wearing them made them look badass. But on anybody else, it'd be like, that is a very interesting choice. But when he wore them, it was like, oh, I command this room right now. And I thought that really helped his character like get in with the anarchists because he was just like, I know who I am. I know what I'm about. And he criticized, you know, part of him getting into their group was him basically telling them that there was a cop around. And that was his way to try to get in with them is pretending like he knew that there was this cop and he wasn't working with the cop. You know, it was this whole deception thing, but he criticized the cop's suit time and time again throughout the movie as being like a cheap suit. And I think that his fashion is ultimately what has helped his undercover game, his fashion sense.
I agree. He's such a striking dude. And especially when you put him in those outfits, you're like, I mean, you would be hard pressed to not spot him on the street. Right. And so, you know, it's funny because, I mean, obviously, that's probably another riff on Bond and how like Bond always looks fucking striking in anything. And then, you know, yet he's supposed to be incognito most of the time. And I think in this one, they were just like, okay, what if that but excess?
Right? Yeah. Cause in Bond, he's like, he's the tidy classic look where it's like very nice, clean cut suits. But in this, it's like, no, like he's just like, right. we're in New York Fashion Week here. We're in Europe. Well, and everybody, I guess, needs to dress nice or dress eclectically in order to fit in with the young folks. And
even cool. Even Yorgi's outfits, you know, when he's in the club and he's being a club manager. And, you know, his casual robe wear in his castle with his like, full-bodied dragon tat. It's so striking. And you're just like, wow, man. Like, you know, if anything, these guys have a very, like you said, eclectic fashion sense that makes it stick out compared to other. I feel like Yorgi's more striking than a bunch of the more era Bond villains that I can't remember off the top, right?
Yeah, there's some very interesting tattoos in this movie too, some very cool tattoo work.
Yeah, I feel like the first shot we see of Xander is his tatted wrists while he's accepting the keys from Hotchkiss.
Right.
And it's funny how Samuel L. Jackson's character, Gibbons, points out, you know, that they're after these bad guys who are all tattoos, just like you, Xander. And, you know, it was still 2002. So I guess having tattoos still made you like different than others. Yeah. Whereas now, like a lot of people have tattoos and it's really not as taboo. But it's funny to think like just 20 years ago, it was still pretty taboo. And that made you like, oh, you're part of this crowd because you have tattoos.
Right. You must have come from Tijuana as Hodge could suggest, my God.
Yeah. Has a sense of notoriety.
So for my first shot, I just want to get into one of my favorite scenes in this movie, which is Kiss My Ass, Scarface. Because I think everything about that scene has aged well and is a really great scene for like movie nerds like us, because it's so giving, right? Because here you are, you just saw this completely unnecessary, like Griggs, you pointed this out when we were watching the movie, this set piece in Colombia, which features one of my favorites, Danny Trejo. Go back and listen to our Desperado El Mariachi episode to hear our thoughts on DT himself. But it features one of my favorite actors ever in Danny Trejo. And it seems so excessive. It's back to the, like, the overarching thing I think of this movie is Rob Cohen being like, I hit it out of the park with Fast and Furious. That was my first big blockbuster success. So why don't I run it back with Vin and then increase my budget like a shitload, right? And that, I think, was the pitch for XXX. I wasn't in the room, but I have a fairly good idea that must have been like what it was, because everything about this movie just relies on the excess and the exactly what you said, right? Like the over reliance on just trying to subvert the typical Bond narrative, and you know it speaks and starts with just that budget figure, right? Fast and Furious was made on a $38 million budget. XXX, $88 million. So they gave my boy $50 million extra dollars to go shoot in Prague and do some crazy stuff. And they were both hits, like both significant box office successes. So everybody who is watching and tracking Cohen's career at this point is just like, hey, okay. So when you've got this scene in Colombia that's just really just over the top and pointless, and like, why does he jump over the barn when all he needs to do is get back to his friend that he's trying to save and get back with the bike? Like, he's trying to save his friend in that scene, and he goes and he jumps over the barn for no reason in a motorcycle. It sets up the long running motif in the movie of every time a motorcycle jump happens, he has to like leave the seat and do a stunt, right? Which is great if you love stunts, but it adds absolutely nothing to the story. Still enjoyable, but then I think what's more enjoyable if you're like a movie nerd is the very next scene, where you have two of the like most well known, like badass action stars of the 2000s just staring each other down. and it's not their first scene, but it's the scene where they kind of like lay all their cards on the table, because Diesel is like, I don't fucking like you, and I don't like your friend. That's why I headbutted him. I don't like this whole thing. I think this is all a sham. This kind of thing is exactly why I do what I do. This is exactly why I like to subvert the law, because you guys take advantage of people by messing with their heads, by messing with their expectations and their emotions. Maybe that's commentary. Maybe I'm reaching. But either way, Samuel L.'s response, and it's funny because you could almost read this as like, this is Samuel L. who's been famous for years now, right? He was in Coming to America, Pulp Fiction. I mean, his career spans a whole decade and a half before Vin Diesel really started to break out in the late 90s, early 2000s, right? And this is, you could almost read this as him being like, you know, you're going to have to get into some shit, right? You don't want to look like me. You know, that whole scene of him just being like, you know, I could send you to jail or you could come work for me, because you're kind of screwed either way. And then he just says, well, you know, the famous line, kiss my ass, Scarface, which is another great movie nerd reference, because Scarface has that amazing scene. Tony meets with the drug dealer and he's like, I don't do anything. I don't break two things. I'm fucking up the quote, the masterful quote where he says like, you know, there's only two things in this world that I don't break, my balls and my word, you know, which takes place in Colombia. And there's like the whole drug trade theme, and like this movie I think is like trying to be kind of explosive. It's like if that last act of Scarface was like the whole movie, and so to have him reference it here, it's like I couldn't have been an accident. And so I just love that scene so much because, like, of all the things. And then both of these actors would later go on to be in the MCU as Nick Fury and Groot, respectively. So
I always forget that Vin Diesel is Groot.
Yeah,
he and that's one of my favorite characters.
That one sentence like a million times, and he's making bank. So good for him.
And again, favorite fun fact about Groot is that he would always ask, like, what am I supposed to be saying here? What else is going on in this scene? Yeah. It's like, what does Groot actually mean when he says, I am Groot? Yeah. Or in the Spanish version, what is the exact translation of Yo soy Groot?
Wow, that's real dedication. To care enough to get the emotional part right of how do I deliver this I am Groot line.
It's why we love Vin. I mean, for real. All right, Riggs, go ahead and give us your second shot, if you please.
Yeah, so I want to figure out what order I want to do this. I think I'm going to be nice before I go a little off on this movie. So the my second shot's going to be... first off, this movie's not great. Like, it's not peak action. It's not incredible anything. It's kind of wild.
Let me just say real quick, and sorry to interrupt, but I would just say, I would put that last avalanche scene right up there with Nolan's avalanche scene from...
That's my next shot! What the hell?
Okay, wait, I'm just... Okay, you
folks,
can get into
doing this for a majority of the alphabet.
Oh my gosh, you stole my thunder!
Okay, I'm so sorry.
I literally have that written down.
Okay, for longtime listeners of the pod, someone tweet in and say, how many times has Pat stolen Marissa's second shot? Because it's been a bunch.
It's way too many.
I'm so sorry.
It's too damn high.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I'll stop right now. Please continue.
So my second shot is this, that despite the insanity that is this movie, watching it for however many times this is that I've seen this, every question you have pretty much gets answered. Mm-hmm. Why can't Vin Diesel shoot anybody? It's because he's bad at guns. And there's a moment in the movie where he's like, I only know how to shoot because I play first-person shooter video games.
I was lived up in a cast for 8 weeks, and I could only play first-person shooter video.
What was he playing?
I mean...
Time Crisis?
In the 2000s, Time Crisis? Call of Duty, would that have been out by then?
Maybe the first Call of Duty?
Like, I would have to go back and see what our first-person shooters... I mean, you know what? He would have had GoldenEye.
Going back
to the Bond, how this isn't Bond. Of course, he admires Bond a little bit. He was probably playing GoldenEye when he's locked up in a cast.
Fuck, you're right. But, okay, sorry.
So there's that. All of these little things come back. His riffs with Gibbons and understanding how the two of them work. Gibbons understanding how XXX works. I do appreciate that the movie is like... tries to make Gibbons to be the first person to ever make the XXX reference, despite the fact that there are, I think, 5 glamour shots of the XXX tattoo on Vin Diesel's neck. Mm-hmm. But it's all these other little things of, like, why is Anarchy 99's plan their plan? And it's because, like, well, they're ex-Soviet guys disillusioned from the world, and they just want to see what kind of chaos they can cause. I thought that it was a reference to... I thought 99 was going to be a reference to... not the Millennium Crisis.
Y2K?
Y2K. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be a Y2K reference. No, it's just because they say in the movie, it's like, no, we left the Soviet Union in 1999 as ex-soldiers, and we decided to cause anarchy. No, so we're Anarchy 99.
Not even the Soviet Union. They just left the Russian army.
Sorry, just...
By that point, the Soviet Union was dissolved.
No, absolutely. I thought they said Soviet in there, but still, they're like, it's not sophisticated, but it's all answered. And watching this movie again, I'm like, oh, everything's got an answer. I also love that there's all these external consistencies. Like you said, Rob Cohen also directed the first The Fast and the Furious. Mm-hmm. And I love that it bled over to this of, no matter what happens, Vin Diesel drives American cars. Yeah. He asked for 10 cars in this movie. Yeah. 9 of them are Ferraris. 1 of them is a GTO. Yeah.
Ferraris, Porsches, and 1 Pontiac.
And like you guys mentioned before, he uses NOS, right?
Yeah, like in the last scene after, what's his name, Griffers?
Well, whoever the not Q is. The
Discount Q, we're just going to refer to him as Discount Q. Discount Q tricks out his car, and he definitely has all the Bond.
Ejectable roof. Yeah. Harpoon gun.
Exactly.
Flamethrower.
Exactly. Fucking rockets out of the light.
Sorry, not Griffiths. He is Agent Toby Lee Shavers.
Yeah. Toby Lee Shaver. That's not as catchy as cute. Well.
Well, also he says, "I'm Shavers, Toby Lee Shavers." He does the non Bond.
Bond cadence. Oh, God. Yeah.
Shavers. Anyway, that's Shavers.
So my second shot is this movie knew exactly what it was doing the whole time, and you can't convince me otherwise.
I think you're right, Riggs.
Okay.
It doesn't take itself seriously at all, and it just kind of leans into that in a way that, you know, I think it's sort of perfect for what it's trying to do. But I think it is funny, like you mentioned, how even though a lot of the plot points are really absurd, they try to give explanations, where a lot of movies like this, they don't care about giving explanations for anything.
Right.
But this movie,
you're just along for the ride.
Yeah, but this movie's like, no, wait, we're going to like say why this absurd point exists because of this other absurd point. And don't you think that we're not going to explain this absurdity?
The doubling down is like what makes this movie oddly like watchable. So...
Yeah.
Marissa, I'm so sorry about that. But
it's all right.
You must have another shot up there somewhere.
I do. So, my shot was going to be, question, is this a better avalanche scene than Inception? but my thunder was stolen, so I'm going to move on to a different shot. Let's see here. So, something that I want to talk about a little bit was you already kind of mentioned it, Riggs, but the video game references in this movie, I noticed that it starts from the very beginning, but then it becomes like a character point for Vin Diesel, to the point where, like you said, Riggs, he uses it as an excuse for why he can't shoot, or that is an excuse for why he can't shoot guns. But also it's just kind of interesting how this movie, like we said, is kind of made for a specific purpose, but I also think it's made for a specific audience. And I think that the people who they were targeting at the time that this movie came out probably really did like to play those kind of video games and really did. And so when they saw that get called out in a movie like this, they were like, oh yeah, hell yeah, the badass guy in this movie plays video games. Because a lot of times, like if you go back to 80s action movies, or not even action movies, just like high school movies or anything like that, there's usually the cool characters making fun of the nerds in the movie for playing games, like whether it be tabletop games or later video games. And that was always associated with like nerds in pop culture, like only nerds play video games. But then that kind of changed over time, right? So now today it's like very universal. A lot of people play video games, even grandmas and grandpas play video games.
That's true.
But when this movie came out, I feel like it was kind of like in between, you know, those extreme time periods of today and then, you know, just before that, the 80s and 90s. And I think that it was trying to give sort of like a shout out to people in the group that like to play video games. And also, you know, did Tony Hawk's video game come out at this point?
Yes.
Was it already out? Okay.
Yes,
and
time.
So obviously that was like a nod because he appeared in this movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I think it was kind of like, it was cool. It must have been cool because a lot of people at this point probably hadn't seen an action hero who admitted to having played video games and also being like a cool character.
I know that's
probably like a minor character point, but I mean the fact that they referenced it so many times and then even had Tony Hawk appears, I feel like it was a purposeful move.
I think Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 was out by that point, and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, two of the best-selling like skateboard video games of all time. People that grew up in PlayStation 1 era or like GameCube era absolutely remember that whole series, because there's like a 70% chance you or someone you knew owned one of those games because they were just fun. Like they, even if you had no remote interest in skateboarding like me, you know, I loved those games because they were just so just gamey and fun. And the whole point was like to rack up points and do high scores and tricks like that. And that actually introduced me to who Tony Hawk was. And so I think you're absolutely right. He was capitalizing on like that fame, the extreme sports of it all. Like his cameo in this movie is like just like all of the meetings of world. And Vin Diesel, known Dungeons and Dragons player, like absolutely big nerd, must have looked at this from the video game angle and been like, oh, this is absolutely great. And I don't think a XXX game was ever made.
No.
But it definitely could have been.
Man, that was a lost opportunity.
It's worth noting that XXX came out in August of 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4 came out in October of 2002.
Oh, it's 02?
Pro Skater 4 is 02.
I owned Pro Skater 4 on the GameCube, and I didn't know that it was 02. I thought it was like 04, 05 when I got my GameCube. Bro, Pro Skater 4, I played all the time. The opening college level, oh, the Alcatraz level?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, dude. So much fun. And there's a special cheat code where you can unlock Jango Fett because Attack of the Clones came out right before then. You could use the jetpack to do more tricks. That was my shit. Ah, nostalgia is a beautiful drug. That's a great point, Marissa. And if I just can add to that, I think that the entire last act is kind of like the boss level of a video game. I did point out to you guys at one point, like when Diesel is like descending the airplane and spinning his snowboard in like a ton of different tricks. Meanwhile, this like nu metal, just blaring grungy soundtrack is just like headbanging in the background. I was like, why do I hear boss music? So I was like, oh my God, this is absurd. If I was on the enemy's side and saw that man just like 720-ing through the air on his way to fuck my shit up, I'd be like, all right, I'm out. Because that shit was well done. So going to my second shot, I just kind of wanted to touch on something that you guys may have not known, but Rob Cohen's filmography has, I hate to say this, but I feel like it kind of peaked at Fast and Furious and then went way down. It's like a mountain. It's the shape of the mountain that Diesel ends up avalanching down in XXX, because you start out, I'm just going through this man's IMDb and you know, listeners, I'm sorry if you guys know this guy's IMDb better than I did before today, but he directed 3 episodes of Miami Vice.
Okay.
You know, he has like that action background.
Sure.
He's ready to go. And he just develops TV episodes all throughout the late 80s, early 90s, culminating with his first like movie, which is Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, which is just a biopic basically about Bruce Lee, who's played by Jason Scott Lee. And on IMDb, this has a 7 out of 10. And I know IMDb is completely subjective, but you know, name me a movie fan or nerd that doesn't check IMDb religiously and I'll show you a liar. So it does matter. Like, people do go on there who are passionate about this, right? He follows that up with Dragonheart in 96.
He directed Dragonheart?
Yeah. And
I love Dragonheart.
I'm looking at this cast.
I am an unabashed fan of this movie. It's not good, but it's got Sean Connery playing a terrible CGI dragon who just screams in Sean Connery the whole time. I am the last one. That's that movie.
This is the big brain Bond connection. He's always had it out for Bond, bro. Dennis Quaid, David Thewlis, Pete Postlewaite, Jason Isaacs. Pretty good cast. I'm very curious to see.
There's a whole section of Dragonheart where it's Sean Connery and I was about to say Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid is always the American Pierce Brosnan to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel so bad because I love Dennis Quaid, but every time I see him, I'm like, oh, you're just American Pierce Brosnan.
Guys, there was a Dragonheart that came out in 2020.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a long-running franchise
Dragonheart
of
Vengeance.
Yeah. Dragonheart is a long-running franchise of really weird fantasy movies. And there's a whole section of this Dragonheart movie that came out with Dennis Quaid and Sean Connery, where it's just the two of them running schemes on every town they can find, where Dennis Quaid comes in saying, "You need dragon insurance." They're like, "We haven't seen a dragon here in 20 years. And then the Sean Connery dragon shows up, burns like a little side of the town. Dennis Quaid, quote unquote, kills the dragon, and then they take the gold and hang out together.
Bro, this sounds like Aragon on shrooms. Like
this came out decades before Aragon, and it definitely inspired Aragon as much as any Lord of the Rings book inspired Aragon.
It looks just like
I
Saphira
really want to check this out now, dog. Dragon. This sounds pretty great.
It's so great. It's awful, but it's so great.
Okay. I love me some dragons. So.
Well, thank you for sharing. I we're gonna check that out now. Maybe bring it up in season two. But okay, so he does that, does a couple TV movies, and then he peaks in 01 with our favorite, The Fast and the Furious, and then he follows that up immediately with Triple X. Obviously, that's a hit as well. But then he just has this run of what I will generously describe as mediocrity, with Stealth in 05, The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor in 08, Alex Cross in 12, and The Boy Next Door with J-Lo in 2015.
Oh.
Yeah. Kind of a low point for my boy Rob, but I just think it's so interesting that like the two movies that we've covered of his on this pod are like obviously widely regarded as his best, but it's just so interesting that like he tries to do another original franchise with Stealth, doesn't get too far, but then he just tries to like jump onto established franchises like The Mummy and Alex Cross to no great effect. But then his next thing is like an erotic thriller. This is not the director I would peg ever in a million years for an erotic thriller. And the scene with the stripper lady in this film is absolutely evidence of that, I think. and then you could even say that the sex scene, quote unquote, with Letty and Vin in Fast and Furious 1, where they're just like grabbing onto the engine chains in the fucking garage. Like that's this man's idea of like an erotic time, and to have him do The Boy Next Door. Listeners who haven't seen it, you're not missing a whole lot, but it's bad, man. It is bad. So I just wanted to point out that Rob Cohen's filmography is the shape of a mountain. Very high peaks, very low lows, much like the avalanche in this film.
But still, we appreciate him for doing everything he did.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you got to take the good with the bad. And my boy Rob is proof of that. So with that, let's get into our final shots. Riggs, please do us the honor.
Okay. So as I've alluded to, one, I swear, y'all, I love this movie. I love this movie. It's great. It is.
And is that because they have a scene on an island in the Pacific?
It's got nothing to do with that. If you have listened to the Fast and the Furious episode, you're familiar with my Saturday afternoon theory. This is not a Saturday afternoon movie. This is a fantastic hangover movie. This is the I need to watch something because I can't stay in bed anymore, but I need a greasy sandwich and I need to not use my brain for a while. That's this movie. To that end, watching this movie and paying attention to this movie, by my count, and this is my third shot, by my count, Xander Cage should have died 23 and a half times.
Oh my gosh.
Is that it?
23 and a half times by my count. I gave him some semblance. It would have been higher, but like I believe he's a skilled athlete. So to run through a couple highlights, the reason I even started this list is I saw him go off the bridge in the opening, the second opening scene. And I'm like, that bridge is too low. And he pulled a parachute? He's dead. I mean, just from the time he was halfway to the ground before he let the parachute go, I'm like, he's done. He's absolutely done. From there, the half, by the way, is when he got hit very hard in the back of the head with a gun.
That would hurt.
And this happens a lot in movies, and like we all kind of believe it. But like half the time you mess that up, you're done for. So that's the half.
Yep.
Some other big points. I gave 3 times he's dead to just the entire Columbia raid because he's just running around a complex with 2 to 3 helicopters shooting 7 to 8 guns.
Mm-hmm.
And he just doesn't die. He doesn't get exploded. I did give one very specific he didn't die. So when he jumps over the barn explodes. And then he just somehow comes through the fire on a motorbike.
Right.
The other ones, the fact that he was able to make it over the bridge in the escape, the main escape scene in Prague, where he was able to do a half raised drawbridge, get over the bridge, land well enough to where he didn't get shot, and then land in a cool enough way to, I think he said again there, like, welcome to the Xander Zone.
Welcome to the Xander Zone.
And then explode every other bike, car, and person in the courtyard.
Oh, wait. Okay. I was thinking about the last scene with the Ahab. You're thinking about when he explodes the whole courtyard. No, then he quotes Discount Q and he says,
fire in the hole.
Fire in the hole.
And then press the button.
And then the only other one that I wanted to put is that, yes, he should have died at least 6 times in that avalanche. Not there was a time when he definitely just went over a cliff and then they're like, no, it's just a small little jump. Yeah. It's like, no, the camper up until that moment is this is a cliff. It is a sheer edge. He is done for. And then it's like, nah, he just kind of hopped it. There's the fact that every single time you look at the avalanche, it's increasing and then it cuts to the snowmobiles and then it cuts back and he's gotten more speed from the avalanche.
Yep.
Again, the logic of this movie internally makes sense. Every question has an answer. The physics of this movie makes zero sense whatsoever. 23.5 times. You want more? Find me somewhere on social media. I'll send you the list.
Which is why, you know, like you said, this is a great hangover movie. You turn your brain off. You don't have to think about the physics of the movie.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like, Riggs, you should make a list of all your different, like, movie versions. You know, your your Saturday afternoon, right, movie, your hangover movie. Then we've got like your Oscar movies where you can only watch in a certain very critical mind state. That's awesome. I'm glad that you kept track of all of them because it's good. We got some hard data here.
Okay. Well, get at Riggs on social if you found other places where he should have died, because I think you covered the whole gamut. But in the meantime, Marissa, what is your final shot?
All right. So I guess I probably should have watched the trailer. I haven't watched the trailer, so I don't know. But okay. So I just assume, and I'm going to talk about probably what, you know, is on everybody. Well, maybe when they first heard of this movie. Okay. So the movie's called Triple X, right? So I wonder, you know, when this came out. Right.
To the listener at home, Pat and I just looked at each other like, where is this going?
No, I'm just curious about this moment in time where a movie came out to the theaters, right, called Triple X. It's not rated R. It's rated PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
But can you imagine all the kids who are like, oh, I'm going to go see Triple X. Like, I imagine that parents, you know, there were probably like concerns and all of this. The movie, I think, tried to sort of capitalize on that idea of like, oh, this movie is like sort of illicit, right? But it's really about the stunt guy who works for the NSA, and it's really not about, you know, any sexual stuff except for some scantily clad women. And I think it's interesting because having not seen this movie before and just hearing the name, I always assumed it would be like a Game of Thrones-esque type thing with featuring, you know, some action. I thought that the focus of this movie was going to be something along those lines. And so I was like, then I had to think back to when this came out, it being 2002, and the world probably wasn't going to put that sort of thing out there. But I think that this movie probably has a legacy because it is silly. Like when I go on IMDb or on Rotten Tomatoes and read some of the reviews, the best critical reviews all say this is great because it's silly.
Yeah.
All the bad critical reviews, you know, say we hate this. But I think when you lean into the silliness of it, you know, this movie and its kind of notorious name kind of add to that silliness, I would say, and sort of, you know, give it the legacy that, you know, is very interesting to me. Because like I said, before having seen it, I didn't really know what to expect just hearing this name, right? But the fact that it turns out to be just like a silly action movie to me was very funny and interesting. So,
well, it's interesting you say that because I kind of wanted to touch on that in my shot too. But before I do, I just want to say, you know, do you think that other movies around this time were focused on that? They were like, I just really want to double down on the silliness and capture as wide of an audience as I can, even if I have to dip into that PG-13 rating, get teenagers on board, you know, even like substitute all risque content, basically in an effort to just be absurd, make more money, have more people come see me. Was that like, I feel like that was so big in that time, yeah. And it's still big today.
I feel like this movie would probably made as much money as it did because it kind of seemed taboo. Like the name itself was probably taboo to some people. And then, but the fact that it was made rated PG-13 meant that they could get, you know, teens and adults to come and watch it. I think that they sort of capitalized on hoping that the name would bring in people, kind of like, you know, the Fatal Attraction-esque movies of the 90s, where, you know, the whole plot was like this risque sort of idea and it was scandalous. And so that's how we draw people into the theater. I feel like this name kind of teased people like, oh, come into the theater. I mean, I don't know. I was too young back then to know what was going on. But, you know, it's interesting to me that they chose that name. But, you know, I think that's part of what makes it so silly is that it ends up being the name of the main character and it's for like X for extreme sports and not necessarily for what you typically think when you think of Triple X, which isn't even really a term that's used anymore, but it was, you know, for a long time, for many decades to refer to explicit movies, right?
Yeah, and like the the fucking the last scene where they're chasing the Ahab and she's like, X, what are you doing? You know, like she's calling him X the whole time. It just leans into it so hard.
It's confusing. Is his name X? Is it Triple X? Is it Xander?
Well, his name's Xander with an X. So I guess if you called him X, it wouldn't be unfair.
Yeah.
And we have to imagine that his name is the main X, the big skin toned X on his neck. And the other two red X's are probably... I don't know, you know, could be a metaphor, could be we're reading too much into it. Either way, it's enjoyable, like you said, Marissa. And you know
silly.
What else is enjoyable? The thing that I wanted to touch on in my third shot was how much this film influenced other films. Obviously, Rob Cohen took a lot of his Fast and Furious a template and put it in this movie, and it's an argument for why Fast and Furious 1, which we covered on the show already, is kind of like a forefather to a lot of modern action films, and a universe, if you will. Like, not saying Marvel ripped them off, but they were definitely, I mean, now we have a cinematic universe with this fucking Fast and Furious franchise because of Hobbs and Shaw. So, you know, they definitely, it's an Ouroboros. It's a self-eating snake. It's all kind of part of the same big giant complex, right? But the films that this influenced specifically, I want to talk about two. One is a 2005 computer animated comedy called Hoodwinked. Because for those of you guys who have not seen Hoodwinked, Hoodwinked is a film written and directed by Corey Edwards, which was like a take on Little... It's like if Little Red Riding Hood and Pulp Fiction had a child. Is kind of the best way to describe it, because it's this like computer animated, nonlinear storytelled film. But it, the most important thing is that it was like independently produced. It was a non-Disney movie that made actually quite a bit of money. I remember seeing it in theaters and it holds up because we rewatched it recently and it's still very funny. It stars Anne Hathaway, Glenn Close, Jim Belushi, Patrick Warburton, Anthony Anderson, and Exhibit. And one of the characters, spoilers for Hoodwinked, which is 16 years old by this point, go seek it out. There is a character that has an alias known as Triple G. And there is a line where an inspector character says, "I couldn't help but notice you had 3 G's tattooed on the back of your neck." And I mean, I've never seen the two movies this close together, right? We watched Hoodwinked in December. We saw XXX just now. And I got to tell you, I thought that was the only reference to XXX. But after rewatching them so closely together, I realized there's a whole scene where Xander grabs 2 grenades, throws them behind him, and starts the giant avalanche we've been talking about all episode. That happens like beat for beat in Hoodwinked and
stops at an edge.
Yeah.
Pops the pins off 2 grenades, pops the pins, pops the switch, tosses them behind her. Just being like, all right, time for an avalanche.
I think the only difference is that the character in Hoodwinked, I think, says a one-liner before they drop the grenade, something like, "Oh, fiddlesticks." and then also you couldn't help but notice the villains in Hoodwinked are of Eastern European origin, just like the villains in XXX. I mean, the similarities are glaring, damn it. And that's what I just wanted to point out. But the real thing I wanted to talk about and the real comparative point I really wanted to make with you guys, my fellow movie nerds, is I wanted to pose you a question. What was the better 2002 action movie? XXX or Die Another Day?
Oh. Well, so here's the thing, Patrick. There is another 2002 action movie that did come out that beats both of these by just absolute miles and miles and miles. And it's this little movie I like to call The Bourne Identity.
Okay, Riggs.
Wait, what's that?
But that's actually good. God.
Now, if we're talking like movies that feature a lot of action, yeah, between this and Die Another Day, this 100%.
Okay. I just wanted to compare it to this because we've been circling around the Bond comparison this whole time. And both of those movies feature a lot of shit happening in the snow. And both are really dumb.
All except right.
Is Die Another Day the tsunami?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the
then
one,
this one wins.
Where they go to the ice like castle,
yes,
right?
Yes. Rosamund Pike sleeps with Pierce Brosnan and then he surfs on a tsunami back up to Iceland.
Wait, how old was Rosamund Pike in this movie?
I don't remember, but let me tell you.
I hated that movie. I hated it. So this,
you didn't
one
like the North Korean intro?
No.
With the song by Madonna?
No.
With it, the man.
Oh, God. I like Madonna's music. I even thought the Madonna song in this was bad.
With the.
Oh, the torture scene and then like the.
Yeah. With the a North Korean son who's played by an Asian actor in the beginning scene, but then he gets reconstructive surgery to be a white man for the rest of the movie.
That's so bad.
You didn't love that?
No, I think that the ice castle thing was, I think I couldn't believe that that was what was happening in that movie once that happened.
It prompted an entire reboot of the franchise, which we covered on our Dry Martini episode. Go see Casino Royale for that.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And it's so funny because like XXX was such a hit. And I think Die Another Day, while I believe it was still financially successful, was critically panned and still is considered among like bottom of the barrel for Bond movies, right? And yeah, I'm looking right here and it says the budget was about 150 million. It made like 432 million. So still technically a success, but I mean, when you compare it to the movies that were rebooted and Skyfall becoming the first Bond film to cross $1 billion because they re-looked at the character and realized, oh, maybe if we just, you know, stop doing the same shit for maybe just a little bit, then we can actually have a successful franchise. And we're not trying to talk about Bond this whole episode, but the comparison, especially with XXX, is just so funny because, like, statistically, XXX was more successful than this one. And also, it launched Vin Diesel's career. And so I think you can chalk it up to more W's than Pierce's final outing.
It's fascinating to go back and read the critical reviews that came out at this time, because a lot of them are like, this is a funny, like, version of James Bond. But there were, on the other side, a lot of critics were saying, man, Vin Diesel's the worst action hero ever. And I'm just laughing at that 20 years later, because I'm like, wow, you thought that. But now, are you thinking, like, I was wrong? Like,
I don't think,
unless they're holding on to that. You know, I think the problem with those critics is that they were just taking it too seriously.
I mean, I don't think those critics feel any differently, but now they can't argue with the man's success. He's part of two of the most successful franchises of all time. Just full stop, right? So, love him or hate him, he's in our lives, and I frankly think that's fucking awesome. So, yeah. Much love to Vin, much love to Rob, much love to this franchise. And I think that's going to do it for Triple Shot. So with that, we're going to get into our final segment where we discuss the endings of movies, no matter how complex they may be, and talk about why directors choose to end movies the way they do, why certain movies end how they do, whether they're setting up for something greater or just because they want to make a statement, or sometimes none of the above. Here in our final segment, Last Call. So Last Call, it is now time to discuss the ending of this film. And, you know, one of the things we love to ask is, where does the ending truly begin? Kind of a thought-provoking question, but in this case, I think it's safe to say the ending is right after Vin Diesel, in probably hypothermic state, shivers and says Bora Bora, and then flat smash cut to a drone shot of the islands in the Pacific, probably not actually Bora Bora, they probably filmed somewhere else, and Vin is with Yelena,
played by Asia Argento. Argento.
Flash forward to, he is with Yelena and they are enjoying their life in seclusion, I want to say. She's been granted asylum, hopefully, and Vin is now a established agent and chilling like a villain just on this beach. And she goes up to him and says, you're going to burn, but then, you know, decides to put tanning oil on him because that makes sense.
So my main question is, why is he with Yelena and not the character that's credited as Xander's bedroom dancer? That is the real question. Well, she is the star of this movie. So, yeah, that's my joke. Obviously, we know that I'm joking about that, because...
No, please elaborate. Who is Xander's bedroom dancer?
That's all it says.
Or the uninitiated.
Yeah, that was the one thing that they tried to do, I guess, that was like the namesake of the movie, by having a risque bedroom dancer scene. But it was just like totally random and out of nowhere. And
do you want to reenact that real quick?
No.
Guys, I'm like, still here. Let me leave first.
No. I just meant the dialogue right before. Like, you'd be Yelena, I'd be Vin. Like, last chance to tuck me in.
Then, oh, yeah, because, yeah, he's flirting with Yelena right before, and then he goes in, and there's this random dancer who's, like, literally on a pole of the bed.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Well, she declines his offer to tuck him in, and she goes,
so he, good morning.
She goes, good morning. And then she, like, walks. She just bails.
Yeah, that's how it works in real life, right? When a woman rejects your advances, you walk into the next room, there's a woman ready to have sex with you.
If that's the way it works in real life, something's wrong.
In there.
But I thought that was funny because it was like, where's the male stripper? But it was 2002.
He said,
the things I do for my country.
Yeah. So then that
happens.
Which
I'm pretty sure is also something Bond has said, yeah, by the way, on at least one occasion.
That's true. It's a very...
Not to bring up Bond, yeah, again, but I swear he said that before.
It's a very Bond thing, right? Because, yeah, he sleeps with this random girl partway through the movie. And then he sort of was like, I like Yelena, though. She's cool and can use guns. And so, and then she's like, she's smart, too. And like, no coincidence that her hair kind of looks like Vesper's. I mean, and I think that Casino Royale might have saw this movie and, yeah, or when they were making that and they were like, oh.
You think Martin Campbell, who directed GoldenEye, was like, yes, more of that.
So then, yeah, he's like, I'm done with this random bedroom dancer. I'm going to really, truly pursue Yelena. And so at the end, they decide, you know what? We're meant for each other. We're going to go to Bora Bora. And
we got a problem, Gibbons.
Yeah.
There's a girl. There's always a girl.
And Gibbons is like, hey, you know, you passed my test. And Xander's like, you gotta be kidding me.
Okay, well, for the listeners, Marissa just brought up the like one of the last lines of the movie, right? Like, you know, because flashback to Bora Bora, and she's putting tanning oil on him despite not wanting him to burn. And
yeah, bad idea. Yeah, like you said.
And
wear sunscreen.
And then, yeah, and then Xander gets a call from Gibbons on his like weird Motorola sidekick with a screen, basically. And
that's FaceTime capable in, yeah, 2002.
In 2002, you could FaceTime on a keyboard phone. But
there's a moment in the movie where he opens it and Gibbons is looking at him through the screen, and Xander goes, "Whoa, I thought this was a cell phone."
Oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that.
It's a great line. It's the same scene where he uses that amazing like fucking fur coat as a blanket after passing out at like probably 5 in the morning.
Anyway.
But then yes, he gets the call and Xander's like, by the way, you passed the test, the Gibbons test. And then Xander looks at Yelena and is like, you gotta be kidding me. And then they jump into the river or the ocean at this point. Wow.
The Pacific River.
They jump
that
into
really big river.
That crystal clear Bora Bora water and swim in a Bondian fashion.
So I haven't seen the other ones. Does Yelena
roll
come
credits
back for the other ones?
No.
No. Well, and that's the interesting thing is this
sequel
movie sets up the sequel. And mm-hmm. And most action movies like this do, but it was very funny of Gibbons calls and he goes, Xander, vacation's over. We need you back. This is some real messed up shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that's where he's like, you passed the test. The only reason he's even calling is like, I know you're there. We have you on satellite imaging.
Yeah.
So he's looking at Xander in Bora Bora, making out with Yelena. He's like, now's the time to call.
Yeah.
Because there's some real messed up shit that we need you back for.
Impeccable timing.
And after he says we need you back, then Xander starts making out with Yelena. Then Gibbons goes, you passed the test. The Gibbons test.
Yeah.
And to which I'm like, is him ignoring the call and making out with this woman the Gibbons test? I have questions.
I can't confirm. but in all seriousness, like, yeah, you're right. It doesn't leave any solid like evidence as to what it is. And it just leaves a lot more questions.
I think I have an idea. I think the Gibbons, I think it's a joke because, right, the beginning of the movie, he has to do those tests, right? And maybe this is obvious and you guys were just joking about this, but then the whole rest of the movie is this one thing where he's trying to go after these 99 anarchists. And so, you know, he's kind of like, that whole thing was actually just another test. And this whole program is just test after test after test. And
I kind of interpreted it as that a little bit. Like the whole mission was a test to see, can we recruit an agent capable person straight out of the civilian population.
But I like the idea better of like, can you lay on this beach with your girlfriend and and put on, and can you, I mean, I don't think he should have passed any tests if he doesn't understand the difference between sunscreen and suntan. How are either of these people agents?
I agree. I think Riggs's read on it is probably the best, because like that means that Gibbons was testing him to be like, can you be a maverick and like just ignore all direct orders for the sake of doing like all the things? And because that's obviously what he's doing. Like from the get go, we understand Gibbons is also like a wild card, because like those NSA directors are like, why'd you bring him in? It's like, I brought him in because we had three agents die on our watch. And it's like, wow, he's the guy you brought in? Holy
the
fuck.
The guys like, the other NSA like directors are like, those are the scum of the earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those scum.
But it is funny because this movie did get a sequel, but it wasn't Vin Diesel. So this movie set up so hard that it's, we need Vin Diesel. And the next movie, it's Ice Cube. And I am pretty sure, and I didn't check this, so I'm running off the fly, I'm pretty sure they say they killed Xander Cage in the sequel. Which
I'm like
is why
95% sure
Cube.
That's correct. I haven't seen State of the Union, the sequel, XXX State of the Union, since 2010. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been a while for me. And I think I do remember that, because I remember being kind of outraged that Vin wasn't back. Not that I dislike Ice Cube in any way, but I just love Vin so much that I was just like, why isn't he back? And I remember watching it thinking, oh, cool, they got Samuel L. back as Augustus Gibbons. But then, like, why isn't Vin in this movie? And I'm pretty sure when I watched it the first time, I thought, they killed him?
Which is why the return of Xander Cage was such a big deal, because it's the whole, he wasn't dead the whole time. And it goes into the same thing with Gibbons, where Gibbons and Cage just continuously are like, die, but they aren't dead.
Yeah.
Because Gibbons also, quote unquote, dies in the sequel. And then I think he, quote unquote, dies in Return of Xander Cage. Mm-hmm. Sorry about this, folks. Spoilers for also XXX State of the Union and XXX Return of Xander Cage.
Yeah.
And none of them stay dead.
Yeah. They try to do that Winter Soldier thing. Spoilers for the Winter Soldier, Captain America.
Spoilers for all movies.
Yeah.
They try to do that Winter Soldier thing where like they kill Samuel L. Jackson, but then he's just like, nah, it's in my contract. I can't actually die. And except for Revenge of the Sith, spoilers for Revenge of the Sith, like it's in my contract, unless George Lucas directs my movie, I can't actually die, or unless it's Deep Blue Sea, spoilers for Deep Blue Sea.
What other Samuel L. Jackson movie should we spoil? He doesn't die in Pulp Fiction.
He doesn't die in The Hitman's Bodyguard.
He doesn't die in The Sixth Sense.
Is he in The Sixth Sense? Oh, no, wait.
Or sorry, Unbreakable.
That
one Shyamalan movie.
I thought maybe he had a cameo in there that I just never noticed. And I was like, am I about to have my mind blown? But okay, yeah, he's in Unbreakable. And then Glass. Still haven't seen Glass.
He does die in Glass.
Okay, well.
Spoilers.
Thanks, Dick. Don't be a dick, Dick.
All right. So that's our final episode. I'm just going to spoil every movie.
Every Samuel L. Jackson movie.
Yeah. That you haven't seen.
We love Samuel L. on this podcast. We love Vin Diesel on this podcast. And frankly, we just love this podcast so much that's kind of why we have made the decision that this will be our season finale. XYZ. We hit all three final letters in one go. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Namely, Marissa and I, we just kind of need to take some time to get life together. We've got some big changes coming up in our personal as well as professional lives that we just need to take some time to work through. And then when we have more time, more bandwidth, if you will, to kind of come back and do a season two, we want to come back strong. There will be a format change that we are still working through as to what that will be. More details will come before season two, episode one drops on the feed. And, we just want to say thank you guys for listening to all these absurd episodes. It's kind of a wacky premise. Some movies that we've covered have been, critical darlings, and movie fans everywhere love them. others have been like, why the fuck are you doing that, right? And the truth is, we just love movies. We love talking with them. We love having guests like Riggs on the show that offer different perspectives and are willing to come over. You sometimes to watch movies in the same room as us, which can be a nightmare because sometimes we don't really shut up during them. But you know, it's all part of the plan. It's all part of the fun, and we really have had a great time this last. Gosh, how long's it been now?
Since October, I think.
October, so like about like 6-7 months, and yeah, we're ready to go, and we will be back. So this is not goodbye forever, but it is. We'll see you soon.
Taking a little break, but we are going to come back. We've got some fresh ideas. We'll still be having drinks. We'll still be watching movies.
Mm-hmm.
So if you love those things or one of those things, or you just enjoy hearing us talk for some reason, exactly. Hopefully you'll come back with us on our second season. But stay tuned, yeah, for announcements on our social media pages.
Uh-huh.
And we'll keep you updated when we're ready to release that first episode. And as Patrick said, thank you so much for listening. It's been so fun to, you know, hear from you all, whether that be through email or social media.
Fan polls were great.
Yeah.
We're going to expect more of those in season two.
Yeah, we've had so much fun doing this. And so we're really excited to start season two sometime soon.
Absolutely. And if you want to listen to us, check us out on Apple Music. Or Apple Podcasts, excuse me, and Spotify. and rate and review us. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you want to see in a prospective season two. Or if you hate us and want us to go burn in a hole, then tell us that too. We love honesty on this podcast, right? And then also follow us on social media if it's not too much trouble. You know, at MomixPod on Facebook and Instagram, MOMIXPOD. And Riggs. Anything to plug, my friend?
Not too much. Follow me on Twitter. I'm trying to post more movie takes now that movies are coming back again. I'm on Twitter just at Riggs_Brown42.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, no. And I'm going to keep in touch with these guys too. I've chatted with Pat and Marissa about doing some things as well. If you like my voice and you'd like to hear me talk, let me know. But this is their pod. I'm just here to help out. Thanks again for having me on, guys. I'm glad I got to be here for the end, the one last job, as it were.
Well, thank you for being here.
So this is it, huh? This is some kind of movie mixology podcast? That was a Suicide Squad joke.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. Did Triple X inspire the Suicide Squad movie?
I'm gonna stop you right. Okay. Because there is actually more connection to that because David Ayer wrote Fast Furious 1 and then directed Suicide. So just stop. So thank you guys again. We'll see you when we see you next. And until next time, you pass the test. The Gibbons test.
Hell yeah.